You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Off to the races. Right. So welcome everybody. My name is David Bryan, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. I have the great pleasure today of speaking with someone I have known for quite a long time, and a very interesting fellow, Patrick McCabe.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks. It's good both to see you, to catch up a little bit, as we were just doing before we started recording all this. And I'm thrilled to talk to you, because I'm actually thrilled to tell the world about you, but we'll get to that. Here's what I notice. You frequently, and you did it in your bio, you frequently sort of reference your corporate career, your sports career, your sales career, as the least important. You didn't actually climb down the corporate ladder. You just switched ladders, right? You went from the world of corporate shenanigans and with big dollars and a lot at stake financially to largely a social, you said it at first, a social worker, right? To largely a life that was about seeing who needed help and helping them in the world of education, in the world of the foster youth world, the homeless. And that's a switch that lots of folks don't do. But I'm not convinced that those first 23, 24 years was... So how is it that those first 23 or 24 years prepared you to do what you do now? What'd you learn there that's with you now that really prepared you to do the stuff you're doing?
Well, that's a good question. And I think it's a bunch of different things. In my case, my business career, I just have a theory about jobs that's content and process. So when you're working in sports and you love sports and you were a high school and college athlete, the content doesn't get any better. I mean, I had these 35 teams I represented. And I had to be up on these teams, how they lost six, they won six in a row. Toyota's angry, Budweiser's thrilled, Honda doesn't like Cleveland, So you're selling all these sponsorships and advertising and stuff. So I had to read the sports section every single day for work.
So for you was really painful, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was hard at the time. So, I was a fanatic growing up in West LA, and I played in high school, played in college over there at Wesleyan in Connecticut, Division III. So the content was just, it was hard to believe. And an apocryphal story for when my kids were little, 5 and 3 or something. And on a Sunday, I said to my wife, I had to go to Chicago because I have to have dinner with Michael Jordan. So you hear the kids and I'll be back in 4 days because we're going to the Cubs game and the Blackhawks hockey game also. So we're really busy. So that kind of stuff was really unbelievable. Now, if in fact jobs are content and process, the process was the corporate, as I said famously at a sales meeting in New York once to a guy who I couldn't stand, let me turn myself around so you can stab me in the front. I said that in front of all the managing directors, and it got a big laugh, and this guy became even less of a friend. So, it was duplicitous. Everything you hear about business is true. A lot of times trained monkeys can do what some of these people do, per what we were talking about before we went on here. It seemed like the higher up you got, the less you did, it was just a matter of survival. So I wasn't crazy about that part. Now, so there were like sort of silver linings. When you're a manager, and I managed a lot, dozens and dozens and dozens of people, you're really just a teacher and a coach. And I had in mind my whole time in my life, starting with my first job in high school, where I was a coach little kids basketball, that I would be a teacher and a coach. And then my model really was my dad. My dad, and he was a big influence on me. Unfortunately, he died before you and I started working together. But I always had in the back of my mind that if somehow, some way, I could be a teacher and a coach, and I was coaching my kids, like you said, every single weekend, it seemed, for 20 years. And you're exactly right. At the end, they were like, "Dad, can someone else coach us? Maybe, you know, I don't know." And I'm like, "No, I'm the best coach. So you're with me." So it was always something in the back of my mind. But I love the idea of having an assistant 20 years ago who's now an executive vice president at Fox Sports. Or a guy who was my best sales guy ever, and he's like the president of the Baltimore Orioles, you know? So that's all about modeling and mentoring, and that's exactly what I'm doing now with fostering homeless kids at Ready to Succeed. So I think it's all kind of interwoven, and life takes you where it's going to take you, and it's serendipitous, and, you know.
Well, sort of. I mean, right? Life takes you where it takes you. You made a choice. I mean, you made a really big, it was a real odd turn, left turn, right turn.
Yeah.
Something that, so what, so can you talk about that? I mean, you.
Yeah, the corollary is that to me, and I'm an expert in this now, we've talked about this, there is such a thing as a midlife crisis. I mean, there are plenty of people I know, and I'm 66 now, but in their mid 40s who wake up one day and they're in their office in Century City over here, and they're a CPA, and they're really thinking seriously about jumping out their window. But it's, so, you know, I was not happy. I was traveling a lot. My kids were growing up. I'd get home on the weekends and made up for it by coaching every single team, I guess. But was coming into a time where there really wasn't a lot of meaning in my life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really care if Budweiser bought the sponsorship in the Seattle Supersonics. And when you're head of sales and you don't care, you know, there's that. So clear indicator, you know, like this is kind of phony and I don't believe in this. And I've said this before, my first day of work in New York City, October 30th, 1978, I knew it was wrong for me. I knew in an hour that the whole business thing was ridiculous. And the only reason I was doing it was to make money and get away.
How'd you end up there? Like, how'd you end up there?
Well, my friends all, I'm, you know, as you know, from LA, yeah. But I went to school in Connecticut, and all the guys, everyone in the frat was moving to New York. So I wasn't going to come back to LA and not be with my friends. So it was that meaningful. That first job was so meaningful. And I sold textiles. I got a job for, I remember it paid $17.5, and I was just thrilled. And my dad had said, I left October 1st. He said, if you don't have a job by Halloween, you're coming right back home because I'm not underwriting you in New York. And I started on Halloween, and I was there for 2.5 years. Again, don't really remember a lot about it, but it was just so I could be with my friends and be in New York. So that told me early on that work was sort of third anyway, behind my family and my friends, you know, mm-hmm. that work wasn't going to play a huge role in my life until very, very recently, meaning with you 20 years ago at New Roads, you know, that there's meaning to that. And yeah, that's really it. But there's a lot of similarities between managing, teaching, coaching, working with younger people, and that's
so the, so the switch. So, you know, you went, and I know the story, but you went first. The first place you worked in education was to take over Newbridge, which was you know, kind of hanging by its fingernails, and they brought you in, as I remember. They brought you in quite specifically because they needed help surviving financially.
That's right.
And you didn't necessarily seek out, I mean, it was a private school that sort of fell in your lap, right? I mean, this opportunity fell in your lap. The next switch from Newbridge to New Roads was similar, although New Roads was New Roads. Was a different demographic. And I'm wondering if it's, you know, after you left New Roads, which was 12 years later, or whatever it was, 13 years later, as I recall, you went to Covenant House. Was that the first thing?
Yeah, I did. I did.
That's a very different population.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't a good fit for me, but because of the foster program we had at New Roads,
right,
at New Visions Foundation with Dr. Paul Cummins, and I had the board oversight of that whole program.
Yes.
I saw it up close, what foster and homeless world was about. I was just naive about the structure, and I had a big office that was like a fishbowl, and the kids would look at me and I'd look at them, and I never interacted with them. And so once you're in a school, as you know, the whole thing is you don't want to be in your office all day. You want to be with these students, you know, and sure, you want to teach and you want to coach teams and, you know, get to know the parents, the ones that are reasonable.
The ones who don't necessarily want to know you, those are the ones you want to know.
Right. Exactly. When I
look back at you, at your tenure there, not knowing you before that, and it was a powerful thing when you started to work with the foster kids, right? which was the board position, right? I mean, it was above, right, and beyond. Yeah, it was really, and it seemed to me that that was one of the most powerful. Like that was a marker. You may not have known it, but it felt like a stake went in the ground there. That was like, okay, this is something else. This is a population.
Yeah, we have 10 board members at Ready to Succeed. And one of them is a young man named Emmanuel Benton. And I let him into, Deanne Sharpton and I got him into the seventh grade at Brentwood School in my son's class. And he's now on my board at Ready to Succeed. So right away, individual influence, and it cost me some money, a little out of pocket expenses trying to help these students and stuff. I didn't tell anybody that. But, when 4 or 5 foster kids call you on Father's Day, that means something. That's huge. And then your own kids 2 weeks later say, oh, is it Father's Day? No, it was 2 weeks ago. So, but 5 foster kids called me and you did. You
know. So it's okay. I was covered. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So it was a very, very powerful thing.
And I remember, it changed how you spoke about things. Really?
Yeah.
It really was.
And it was something I was never exposed to. I mean, but I'll tell you, not getting paid, working at Newbridge the first day, the first hour, unlike my first job in New York City, I knew it was for me. I knew it was just the right thing. I'd made, you know, people are like, this is kind of crazy. You know, you're going from this corner office to this office that overlooks the sandbox. I mean, and you're not getting paid and the place is $400,000 in debt. And when you get into a situation like that, it's incredibly energizing. I mean, I never worked so hard in my life. And then Bruce Graham, Dana Pumpkin, Kathy and Shelley, I mean, I was surrounded by these genius educators, you know, and to learn from them. And technically, I guess, you know, they worked for me, which I don't like. I don't say that, but, you know, they were so much smarter than I was and whatever else. So, it was I guess it could have gone under, you know.
Exactly. There's a way in which what went on at Newbridge was sort of alchemy, right? I mean, it was, you know, you guys were in the fires together, so coming through that and out of that, that's not an experience most folks go through, and it's a, you know, the connection is there for life. It just can't not be.
Yeah, and like, I sent you an email today about the annual executive meeting at Don Antonio, so you know we're still thick, and Kathy's son is getting married in May, on May 22nd, which will be my 10th anniversary of leaving New Roads. Yeah, so that, you know, you need challenges in your life. And I was, I got bought out by Rupert Murdoch, and I was hanging around and like simple Irish peasant. And then he buys me out, and it was time to really make that change. And, you know, when I was at Newbridge and New Roads, we've talked about this every month, some film editor wants to be a third grade teacher, you know?
Sure.
And he comes in and says, you know, I really want to be a teacher. And I'm like, well, okay. And, you know, I'm a little skeptical. And they'll say, well, you were a sports agent, right? And now you're a headmaster. Well, yeah, but that's kind of, there are a lot of sports agents that are also headmasters.
My experience with that is that, you know, I understand the pull from a lot of folks who try to make that change. And some do and some don't, right? I mean, or they make the change, but it feels more like, you know, they don't necessarily stay. But it's not, it's, you know, they've jumped in, they've jumped from the pan, frying pan into the fire, or it's just not the right escape route, right? I mean, they're probably right. They need to stop doing what they're doing, but they don't necessarily get
a way to stick your toe in the water. I guess you could volunteer and you'd right. tutor on the weekends and you see right. how you like it or something. But 9 times out of 10, that was like a crash and burn thing. The Hollywood, the studio senior VP who becomes the sixth grade teacher.
Sure.
It's too much. And in my case, it was just incredible adversity that was overcome. And then that kind of fueled me to keep going. And then throwing in, thanks to you, the teaching and the coaching with it. I'm not sure strictly as an administrator, I would have been crazy about.
Yeah,
you
know, it was kind of terrible.
Without any, because again, then you're working in an insurance agency.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely the love of the kids. And then
totally.
Demographic,
totally.
As it got more and more serious in terms of it wasn't part of my background. I'm an upper middle class guy who was able to sustain his upper middle classdom into his adulthood. You know, to see, you know, when you meet a kid who's living in a car with their siblings, like my right. Regina, you saw in her little film, you know, she lived in an abandoned house for several years with 2 younger siblings and in Florida, and then got into UCLA, and now she's getting a PhD. So, right. you know, you see that.
True.
And yeah, our own kids are inspiring. I happen to like my kids. Some people don't like their yeah. I like mine a lot.
I like your kids too, so.
Yeah, I mean, they're successful or whatever that means. But when you see that level of success, it's, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. It's not part of what I was thinking about, but, you know, your kids have watched you. Your kids have watched you go from.
A big deal to no.
Big deal corporate guy to you're working with what? You're doing what? You're like, what? And do you think that's affected some of the choices they're making?
Maybe not in terms of career, but my son is 32 and it's just been, he's got the gift for real estate finance. It's like, I don't want to say my kid's an idiot savant, but there's something about this that he knows everything about it. He's 32 years old. So he's a top 5 individual donor to Ready to Succeed. So when you have that kind of effect on your own kids, and he totally gets it. And my daughter's the same way. She's not quite there financially, but they're both, and both of them are modeling and mentoring for students. I have a couple
That's
young
great.
Women who want to be interior designers, and my daughter already is doing well in interior design. And then the real estate thing, you know, there are plenty of kids, because it's the real estate and entertainment are the business of the town, you know, in LA, sure. as you know. So they're both mentoring kids. And then in my son's case, he's a top donor. So, yeah, they get it full blast, I mm-hmm. think.
Okay, so tell me about where Ready to Succeed came from. Like, what?
Well, it came out of the foster program at New Visions. So we had that program was called Center for Educational Opportunity, and it was high school aged foster youth
yes.
for pretty bad situations, group right. homes, multiple placements. Really bad stuff. And we were putting them into New Roads and Crossroads and Brentwood and Harvard Westlake and Archer, Marlboro. These are all largely white West Side, except for New Roads, largely white West Side prep schools. And I never worried about these kids academically, but I worried about them sociologically, you know, that you get into a Crossroads or these are high-end West LA prep schools. And the person next to you at one of these schools, the dad has a private jet. You know, and you're living in a group home. So, but I also knew academically and in terms of pulling themselves together, a la Emmanuel Benton on my board now, mm-hmm. About to be named the youngest ever managing director at Verizon Incorporated in Washington, D.C. I knew he had the goods for college, mm-hmm. but I always wondered what happened to them, how you could go to college and have move-in day in the dorm. And everyone else went to Bed Bath & Beyond with their parents, and you don't have parents, and you don't have bedding, and you don't have a lamp, and you don't have a coat if you're in the Northeast.
And what do you do at Thanksgiving when everybody goes home? And what do you do at Christmas? And what do you do?
My kids, they hate Parents Weekend. I mean, they have a visceral hatred for Parents Weekend.
Right.
It takes them back, you know, to what their situation is. So once I saw that, when we were together at New Roads and we had that program, I always wondered what happened to them in college. And then I did a little research. Fortunately for me, I met my partner, Romulus Sally, who is the brains And the beauty, you know, I know, hashtag me too. You can't say that. She's a very beautiful woman. And she just filled in all the technology, and she filled in all, and she had never worked in nonprofit, never been on a nonprofit board. You know, she was a studio executive. She was like the number five employee of the Huffington Post, Arianna Huffington. She was a major media executive, and she wanted to create what we've done for profit. She wanted to take the kid who went to Crossroads, Harvard, Westlake, even New Roads, goes to Wisconsin, is an English major, and then gets out and doesn't know what the hell to do. And she was going to career up those kind of kids for profit, where you charge the family $5,000. I saw her original business plan. And then I famously said to her, you know, I'm at a point where I don't work with overserved kids. I work with underserved kids. And this is going to be a nonprofit, and it's going to be foster only. Students in college who need career support, bedding, lamps, coats, whatever it takes to get them through.
So it's the support. It's you support kids. You support kids through college. That does not necessarily mean financially, right? It's not like you're paying tuition.
We're a scholarship organization too. We have a donor, but the research was about foster college youth, what their needs were. And there's so much, and you know this, there's so much college readiness.
Yes.
Underrepresented kids. You know, there's the Posse Foundation, and there's ABC at a Better Chance out here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's something called Southern California College Access Network. And I became a member, and I started going to the meetings, and it's 140 organizations. And I was there once, and I said, I think it's great what everyone's doing. I was on a panel in terms of college readiness, but who here does college stayedness? Like, what do you mean? Well, like persistence. Who here helps, once they're in college, foster, homeless, undocumented, first gen students who are largely underserved? Who helps them? And no one's hand went up. So now we got an organization that's all about staying in college.
Mm-hmm.
It's just for foster kids, and 99% of it is career oriented. So I did a big survey. I looked around, and there's literally no one else really in the country doing exactly what I'm doing. So. Sometimes, as you know, the best ideas are really simple ideas, and we're a very simple idea with a lot of moving parts right now.
Yeah,
it was just one of those niche things that I stumbled into, and then meet my partner, like I said, is the most capable person I've ever been around, which is a really good partner to have, especially when you're me and she's a technologist, like we talked about, and I'm learning this.
Finally got attachments.
Yeah.
Down.
Just trying to get those attachments down. So it just, you know, it's like one of those fairy tale things.
Yeah.
Where it all worked out. But definitely the genus was in that program with Paul and you and Deanne Charton, with those kids, because I couldn't believe, talk about content and process. Now the content for me is these unbelievable off the charts foster homeless kids. And the process is just getting them through school and getting them on the right career track.
So what does that entail? Like, how? I mean, I'm not asking you to talk about this if you don't want to, but what is, so you start this organization, and that means what? You have to find the kids.
Yeah.
And then who supports the kids? I don't mean financially necessarily, but like, who's,
yeah.
Who's,
well, every
the phone when they call and they say, there's a whatever, and I need blankets or whatever it is.
There's something called the Guardian programs in the state of California. So what is that? Well, that's a food bank. It's a food pantry. It's academic counseling. It's jackets. It's everything. But it's not career. So they do. And a lot of this, David, has to do with privacy restrictions that have been lifted. In the past, you couldn't do a FAFSA, you know, financial aid, and you couldn't identify as foster. And so the schools now, in admission, and obviously in financial aid, because I don't have anyone paying full ride.
Right.
Everyone's on full ride. They're not paying full tuition, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
They check a box that they're foster. They get appealed to by the Guardian programs. I go to the Guardian programs, and in the past, I pitched in person. First 4 years, I'd go in person, their annual meeting, and kids would sign up. But they were the forward thinking. What am I going to be when I grow up? What is my career going to be?
So they sought you out And yeah. Kids?
Yeah, we get exposure through the Guardian programs, and now we know all the Guardian people. But the great thing, weird thing to say, the incredibly great thing for us about COVID was that our whole curriculum and all our helping, counseling, coaching, networking, is all online. So in the past, we would just be LA County. And now I have UC Santa Cruz, I have Berkeley, I have UC Davis, I have Cal State Sonoma is a big place for me because it's all virtual. Mm-hmm. So that kind of exploded our numbers in terms of what we were doing, where we didn't have to do it just in person. So the Guardian programs are very important. More and more, I'm thinking of, if I can do this privacy-wise, going to LAUSD, LA Unified here in LA, and finding out at the least served schools who the foster kids are, and starting to recruit them in high school, encourage them to go to college, get them into four-year schools, and then it's soup to nuts. So our program generally runs from sophomore, junior, senior year and on. And when I say and on, I mean another 3 years. We haven't had anybody in our program who has left our program. If they're 4 years out, we're still in touch with them. They're changing jobs. Mm-hmm. They need a little help, first and last rent, whatever. We're going to do that for them. I had a kid recently ask me how long the program was. And I said, it's really 6 years, sophomore year, junior, and then 3 years after. And he said, well, I think this is a 60-year program. And I said, well, I'll be 128 then. So
good.
You'll be around.
I'll have something to do.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
So,
and that's because, David, that's just one more thing. That's because graduation day for a foster youth from a four-year school is a miracle. A kid who graduates USC, we've had four kids go through Harvard. We've had five kids go through Columbia. We have two sisters went to Bryn Mawr and Wellesley, really bad foster background. They're both honor students. They're both investment bankers right now. And I'm like, don't be a social worker. Be an investment banker. You're doing the right thing. These are miracle kids, right? But so graduation day is the greatest day of their life. Graduation day is the worst day in their life.
Right.
They lose their food. They lose their food. Everything stops. It stopped at 18 and now it stops again. They lose their food. They lose their housing. They lose their social network, friends. They lose their mental health counseling. And they're out in the world. And they're not going back to mom and dad's and in the basement for 6 months trying to figure out what to do. They don't have that. So a lot of times those kids will go work at Starbucks and I can put them into Google. They're a 3.9 in engineering and they're at Starbucks because they have to eat. So we pull them out of Starbucks, put them into Google, you know. But they may not have a car. They may not have any place to live after leaving the dorm. So it's this total mixed bag. I mean,
and the people who work at Ready to Succeed with contact with the kids are doing, you know, everything that is required depending upon what that kid needs. So they're.
Yeah, I always say we're not in loco parentis, but we are.
But you are.
We are, you know. I mean, and these are distressed situations. A lot of time with a foster youth, and this, they're all self-identified. We don't have requirements like, oh, you have to be in the system for 2 years and you have to have had three placements or anything. These are all students, and there's a wide, wide gradation between the kid who was in foster care with grandma for 6 months and then gets reunited with the family. Mm-hmm. That's called kin care with an aunt or uncle or grandma or grandpa. Mm-hmm. And then goes back to the nuclear family. And the kid that's born into foster care, who's there for 18 years and has 12 different placements. We have a young woman at Columbia who took her out of Crossroads School, where you used to teach. And she had 12 placements. And her senior art project, she's an avid bird watcher. She goes to Central Park all the time, loves bird watching, and always has. And her senior project at Crossroads, she took an 8-foot ficus tree and built 12 bird houses that represented the 12 foster homes she had been in.
Oh, wow.
Like one was black with black doors and no windows, and one was made out of graham crackers and, you know, whatever else. That was the last one where she liked the mother, you know. It was a devastating, it was an incredible,
powerful thing. And terrifying and awful. Yeah,
at the same time. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So there are all these real gradations. So when we talk about foster youth, we're really talking about a lot of different things.
Right. Right. And the folks that work are trained social workers.
Yeah. Well, we're all,
is that a requirement for you guys? And
yeah, what's called trauma informed therapy. We have to be up on all that because that's the problem. The biggest problem I've had in 6 years, in going into our seventh year here, is volunteers. You know, you get some nice guy who's a lawyer and a kid wants to be a lawyer. And then the lawyer says, tell me what it's like to be abused. Tell me what it's like to be, you know what? You can't ask that. So you can't just bring volunteers in without having them go through trauma-informed therapy training, right? So,
so most of the people that work with the kids are volunteers? Or all of them?
No, they're not. They're full-time. They're MSWs, yeah. MFCs.
Yeah.
You know, once again, I'm the only one out of advanced.
With no training.
No training.
it all goes back to sports.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's like my dad getting his, his high school GED. Maybe I can get a honorary MSW or something. But no, these are people who are very experienced working with youth. And, they worked at Posse or they worked for the county for the Department of Family Services or, whatever else. So they know what they're doing, you know.
And you just said a little while ago, you have 300 kids in the program.
Yeah, we had 100 till a month ago. Right. And that was 60 current foster kids in 19 schools in California. And a couple in the Ivy League, and 40 alums who had gone through our program and had graduated college.
You just can't get rid of them.
Yeah, just, right. that was ready to succeed, foster only. And then we were approached by something called the Kane Foundation, K-A-Y-N-E. He's a big, he and his wife have a big foundation here. And I happen to know him. And he had a very similar program for first-gen scholars that were coming out of 10 designated schools in Los Angeles. I knew Rick Kane. And they hired us January 1st. So that's 140 current students and 60 alumni. So we have a total of 100 alumni in the two programs, and we have 200 active students right
now. You're going to need a bigger boat.
Yes, we are.
And what's the reception of the, you want to help them get jobs. So you go around, somebody goes around and makes connections with potential employers.
Yeah, I mean, initially,
the
first batch of kids was my partner, Rami LaSalle, and I walking into Bank of America, where I know the vice chairman, and saying, here's this kid, she wants to be in banking, and now it's your problem, you need to hire her. So it was all forced. I mean, literally walking kids in. The girl who went to Wellesley's at an investment bank now, and we went in, and we came back in 3 minutes, and she had a job. And we're in the elevator and she says, Mr. McCabe, is that how it works? Kind of. I said, yeah. That she goes, they just hired. Did you hear? They hired me. Yeah. I said, yeah, I told the guy to hire you. He said, he was in my wedding. You know, like, this is how it works, you know. So now it's much more systemized. But Rami and I have 75 years of being in this market, you know, and she's of the same background as me. Her husband's a big agent. Her father-in-law produced the Tonight Show for 25 years, really tied into entertainment. And now it's become much more systemized. We have a lot more corporate partners than we have kids.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yeah. So, you know, if a kid wants to be a lawyer, I got 20 people that can talk to them, you know. But the difference for foster and mainstream, if we can use that term. So my son, your friend, Will McCabe, 10 years ago, graduates Boston College, right? And he goes to the undergraduate business program, and he's kind of a hotshot. And he comes home and he wants to go surfing, but he doesn't know how to get a job. He didn't, you know. So I said, what are you interested in? He said, well, mom's dad, my grandfather, very successful real estate guy. I like real estate. I think it'd be interesting. I said, good. Here's a directory from a private club that I belong to. You've been there. And I've checked everyone off who works in real estate. So start with the A's.
Yeah.
And call all these people, right? Now, no one's saying that to a foster kid. Oh, here's my private directory. My friend, you know, I'm your dad. Here's one. So he gets to the B's. My son, Johnny Bertram, old, went to high school with the guy. Done. Hired him, you know. So you talk about leveling the playing field.
Yeah.
And it's like that, you know, when it's like people like me or the white West Side people could just say, well, your cousin's the head of Paramount Pictures, just go over, you know. And so they don't have that network and they don't know how to do that networking. So that's probably the mentoring. And so that's probably the most important thing with these students. I interviewed a kid yesterday, he's 19, goes to Cal Poly Pomona. Where'd you go to high school? I really didn't. I got a GED. I'm in Pomona. I don't have any siblings. My mother's an addict. She lives in the San Fernando Valley. And I'm on my own. I work 50 hours a week and I go to school full time. And I have my own apartment. But someone's got to show me how to get a summer internship. Someone has to model and mentor for me because I don't have any mentors other than social workers. And I have my own clothing company. I mean, you know, they start telling you this stuff and you're like, well, it's just like profoundly amazing, but they don't have that overriding nuclear family thing that could help them. So, you know, and no knock on my son, he's a hardworking guy. He's had real success on his own.
Right, good.
But you know, to get in that first door was pretty easy, and it's not easy for foster, homeless, undocumented first gen.
Does Ready to Succeed turn kids down?
Very, very, very rarely. You know, they have to interview with us. It's a half hour interview. We'll have a new cohort of 35 this year. We probably got 37, 38 applications. They're just sometimes they're freshman students that have no work history at all, and they need to get an internship and get themselves together. But it's very, very rare. I'm famous with my 14 other employees that I've never turned anybody down. And I'll get a call about a kid in San Diego from a friend of mine, and I'll go to work on that. And they're like, they have to do applications, Pat, and they have to do this and do that. And you know, it's like New Roads, you know, yeah, bring your kid in. Yeah, you know, oh, well, shouldn't we get it or something? No, seems okay. So very, very rarely, because these kids have been so disappointed so many times, and I'm not going to be the one that disappoints.
Right, you're going to be yet another door that doesn't open.
Yeah, and then, you know, I'm thinking of an African-American, I love, his name is John, went to UCLA, pre-med and unraveled, you know, something triggered him. And you know, he's gone. He's in a car somewhere, living in a car in Antelope Valley or something out there, and no one can find him. So, and that's not just me. He dropped out of UCLA. He dropped out. He broke up with his girlfriend. Right. He got on drugs, selling drugs. I don't know what, you know, selling himself. You know, that happens too. Saw a lot of Covenant House women, especially selling their bodies to keep going. So, yeah, but that's the outlier. 98% of our students are graduating college and replacing them.
But you said something a little while ago that just occurred to me now. So you got 300 kids and, you know, and growing, whatever to say. Is what you're doing just a drop in the bucket or?
Well, there are 36,000 foster kids in LA County, right?
So in LA County, in LA County.
Yeah, yeah. And twice as many homeless people, right? They're doing the count right now. There's probably 75,000 unsheltered people. Right. So you got 36,000 people. Statistically, 3% graduate a four-year school. So you can do the easy math. It's 1,000 kids. And I have probably, including Kane, foster kids, I probably got 15% against that 1,000 kids. So there's
room for problems. So, but also, how many kids would go if there were more?
Well, 10% of all foster kids go to college, but only 1 in 3 out of that 10% graduate.
Graduate, and then
they fall away because no one's looking after them.
But also I suspect that there's a bunch of kids who could benefit from some level of going to college, whether it's not, you know, who knows, that because they don't bump into a program in high school, or they don't bump into a mentor like you, or college is not even in there. It's not even anywhere on the horizon, right? But it could be.
Yeah. Right?
So it's a huge problem.
Yeah, I think the county, the only thing they do well with foster kids is they push them to education.
They do.
Let's get you settled. Here's this school, Camino Nuevo. It's a fantastic charter school.
Right.
And, you know,
and then the schools push towards college.
Yeah, the school's becoming local parents. But the apocryphal story of the kid in the group home with the birthday card on his door, "You're 18, congratulations, please gather up all your possessions in, in this plastic trash bag and get out. Hey, happy birthday, you're 18. But
you're 18, now you're homeless, right?
Yeah, now you're homeless, you know, so it's so screwed up. Our friend Karen Bass, the next mayor of Los Angeles, I
hope that's true.
Do we you know, former New Rose parent.
Yes.
Wonderful. Lovely, lovely person.
Wonderful person.
The foremost advocate for foster youth in the country.
Yeah.
And she wrote a bill, Assembly Bill 12, that extended most kids' benefits to 21 years old from 18 years old. So she's a genius. She's the savior. She's God as far as we're concerned. So so it's getting better. But at the same time, it's just it's just complicated.
Yeah. Is it tough for you guys to get volunteers? I mean, good volunteers?
No, because we keep it in a very narrow lane that is strictly occupational. Mm-hmm. So I think people like to impart what their background is. And we do these monthly seminars, and we'll probably have 6 to 8 professionals on the call, on a Zoom call, and all the kids will get on. And the kids love it when a guy says, yeah, you know, like I got thrown out of high school because I screwed up badly. And then, God, I got my first job. I got fired because I had too much to drink and I forgot to go to the meeting. And they just love, because everyone's a senior VP, right? Everyone's like head of this and head of that. And they're like, they love sharing in that hard road stuff, you know? And it makes, it's a commonality, right? I mean, none of us started as an executive vice president. It just doesn't work that way, you know? So the volunteers, that way, it's strictly occupational, whereas naively at first, we thought we had a big brother, big sister program, and it was not a good idea because you have to earn their trust. When you work with foster youth, it takes time and it takes money. It's expensive to work with them to do what we do. It's a $3 million company right now, $2 million of which is covered by Kane, which we're thrilled about, but we still have to
rent. What's the expense? What do the expenses go to?
Well, a lot of it is staffing with these caseworkers. You know, they're not cheap because they all have advanced degrees.
Sure.
So that's expensive.
Office space.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you're running a business and
then
insurance, and you have, you know, all these other a million costs. So it's not cheap.
And then the support, is a big chunk of it support for the kids directly to the kids to supplement whatever it is, or no?
Yeah. Like, you know, we've recently become a scholarship organization. Kane, to their great credit, every kid gets $2,000 a year, you know, but tightly patrolled.
You can't go there, throw the weekend kegger.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or a girl was getting a manicure every week. I said, hey, you know, you look great, but
great nails.
Let's think about buying some books, you know, like, come on. And then Kane, to their immense credit, every senior, they pay between $12,000 and $15,000 of their loan. So a kid's coming out of UCLA and he's a Kane scholar, they'll pay half that loan off, which really, really helps, you know. And that's where we're going too. We have donors now. At first, we had what we called an emergency fund or a bridge fund. And then I realized everything was an emergency.
Everything.
I mean, the dental work and the car breaks down.
Yeah.
And my foster mother died in Seattle and the funeral's in 2 days. What do I do? Well, here's your $1,000 to fly there. You know, you got someplace to stay? No. It's $500. No. Right. So you have to do that and you have to have money on hand. So that gets really, when you're talking about 300 kids, that's pretty expensive.
Yeah. So I got a question for you. Not that it's going to happen, but, you know, if Pat McCabe didn't think he would, because you mentioned it, he was 65 and getting older. Is there knowing what you know now, is there a next gig? Would there be, if you were living to 125, like, what's the next ladder that you're going to climb? Yearning somewhere?
No, it's clearly it's the homeless kid population. You know, they're 15,000 homeless kids in LAUSD. And there has to be a task force, and I don't think there is within LAUSD, that works specifically with students 4 to 14, especially, that are homeless and are moving around to different schools and sleeping in a, you know, there's no Wi-Fi in a 25-year-old car. So now you've had 2 years of this situation doing what we're doing here. I guess this is remote learning for both of us, you know. And so the fourth grader who was really in the second grade is now in kindergarten because they've lost 2 more years, you know. So that's an epidemic that no one seems to talk about the unhoused kids that are in LAUSD. So I'd go in, I'd start a task force. I would identify every one of those kids and I'd create resources out of lots and lots of money from the state of California there is. So that would be the next thing, because the only people I can think about that are least less served than these foster kids I have are the homeless children population.
Right.
So that's the next thing. I'm kind of formulating it. I'll be 67. We started Ready to Succeed symbolically on my 60th birthday because I swore off all institutions, schools, companies, whatever, and I was going to work for myself. And I think, as you know, I'm not a real entrepreneurial guy. I mean, again, fortunately, I ran into this Romulus Sally, and she's the brains behind it. So, but that to me would be the final chapter where you contributed to that situation. So, you know, and then, you know, are we dilettantes? Because are we skimming here with the 3% that are going to graduate college? What about the 97% that are homeless and aren't going to get a 4-year degree? What happens to them, you know, or foster rather? And that's I saw that up close at Covenant House. I had 22-year-old kids with a third grade education. What do you do with that kid? You know,
right.
So it can be looked at a lot of different ways. But as for myself, it's just like Newbridge School. I mean, I get up early and I just get to work. I just love this. I've never done anything that I've loved so much, you know. So
great, Pat.
You want to keep it going, even though it gets bigger and more bureaucratic and, you know, insurance premium.
Yeah, although you're never going to. I mean, I was about to say, you just don't lose contact with the kids. But I know you. You're never going to lose contact.
No, I don't.
Well, you know, you may not say it. It's a life well lived. From the outside looking in, it is a life well lived.
And like I always say, like, so I'm an agent and I have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and I'm traveling around with him. And then at Sports Channel, I had the Bulls and I got to know Jordan and Pippen. So it was all glamorous. And you're at a cocktail party and everyone wants to talk to you because you're an agent, right? And I think you saw this probably clearly. The only thing that trumps that is being head of a school on the West Side, because everyone wants to know what you think, you know, what's the difference between New Roads and Crossroads? Well, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so now you're at a cocktail party and everyone's kids are in a private school and like you're head of a real private school, you know, and you're more popular than the hockey.
Is that Jabbar back there?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, the sports agent's in the corner looking for people to talk to. So it's a weird thing. And so when I left that behind, man, I just had no interest. And I still read the sports section. I'm going to the Lakers tonight. They're playing the Clippers, you know. LeBron James, I think, is the ninth wonder of the world or something. But I don't care. You know, I've been to 1,000 games. I don't care.
Yeah. Somebody's gonna win. Somebody's gonna lose.
Yeah.
They're all really tall.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, up close, fun. I mean,
yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah, it's super fun. But you know, by and large, you know, I don't care about any of that anymore.
Yeah.
And like a lot of people I know 20, 25 years in, like I said, they look around and, you know, where's the meaning, you know? And I don't like fulfilled and I don't like meaningful and I don't like important and I don't like giving back and I don't like any of those phrases, but I feel.
Wait, so what do you like? What I mean, there's got to be a word for it.
Self-centered arrogance comes to mind. You know, I think people like, you know, and I've talked a lot about this. I don't know.
I know this piece of you from years ago. This is your sort of I'm not talking about like, you know, patting yourself on the back because look what I'm doing for those poor kids. But this is that piece of you that that does not acknowledge that you're doing something good because you're getting because you're feeling reward from what you do, doesn't mean that's your motivation for doing it, and that you're
that's true.
It's like you know, remember that thing they taught us in first social science class you ever took? You know, correlation is not causation. So the fact that you can find it, yeah, this feels really good. Aha, you're just doing it for yourself. Bullshit. You know, I know you better than that. You're not just doing it for yourself. Yeah, it feels really good.
Yeah, no, and like I said, I'm up early, and this job is one, and working in the school, those are my two top jobs. But, you know, and I'm thinking of somebody you know very well, and the ego kind of ran away with it, you know, did so many good things and saved all this schools and kids and stuff, and then it got to be like a problem. So I think it's important to kind of keep yourself in check and thinking about it, you know.
Yeah,
I don't compare myself to anybody else, and I certainly don't care about people that are incredibly financially successful, because I don't think that means anything. But you know, it is, I will give you, relatively fulfilling.
Yeah, it's whatever word you would use in place of that. But it is.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll say it from the out. You don't have to say it. I will say it is a life. When I look at your life, it is a life well lived. It is.
Yeah.
It's something that more people, from my perspective, more people should aspire to. Jeez, yeah. I'd like to be like that guy.
Well, but anyway, really enjoyed
it. 1,000. Yeah.
And great to catch up. And we'll keep you posted. And thank you for your support too. Ready to Succeed. And we're off and running. It's all good.
Yeah. Hey.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.